ETD, you're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Jeff Rasmussen, a retired Racine Unified teacher and administrator who currently serves as president of the Racine Area Retired Educators Association, Steve Brown, a retired professor of educational leadership, and former Kenosha Unified School Superintendent Joe Mangi. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Good morning, everyone. This is Joe Mangi for WGTD Gateway 91.1 HD, and this is Education Matters, a program that features people of Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, people who are making a difference, people who are having a very positive impact on their respective communities, people who are practicing peace. We would like to thank President Brian Albrecht, our radio engineer Troy McDonald, and Dave Cole and Dave McGrath, program directors here at WGTD Gateway, for helping us produce this fine programming on a Saturday morning. And thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in every Saturday. Listening is a form of loving, and we love you, and we thank you for loving us back. So, we have great guests today, and leading the way is Mary Beth Sulke, and Mary Beth is a former KUSD elementary teacher, the Chat and Chew Lady for Kenosha and Racine, coordinator of the Peace Learning Circles group that we're all part of. Teacher at Our Lady of Grace School in Racine, one of the co-founders of Peace Learning Circles, and a community connector, our Mother Teresa, really. So getting back to World Kindness Day, Mary Beth is going to introduce our two guests, Bob Bizet, author and community leader, and Shre Wu, who just earned her master's degree from UW-Madison in social work and is going to change the world, one community at a time. So, International Kindness Day was yesterday, November 13th, began in 1998 by the World Kindness Movement. It is a day to highlight good deeds in the community, focusing on positive power. Listen to that. It's important. Positive power and the common thread of kindness which binds us all together. So I hear this, and I hear the words positive power, because power can be positive, and I hear the common thread of kindness. It's a day that encourages people to respect boundaries, race, and religion. Kindness is a fundamental part of the human condition, which bridges the divides of race, religion, politics, gender, and zip codes. So, Mary Beth, can you... We'll start with Shre Wu, but can you introduce Shre Wu or Elaine? And Elaine, you got to tell us how you came up with the word Elaine, because all the Seinfeld listeners out there, it's the first thing they're going to think of. So Mary Beth, how do you know Shre Wu?
Well, I have always loved all people of the world. When I was a little girl at age 5, my mother gave me a globe as a birthday present, and took me to Wei Chai downtown Kenosha when it opened. And I was so fascinated to eat Chinese food. And I was thrilled to have it. And I said, oh, this is so great. These are the first Chinese people I've ever met. How interesting. And I said, I want to go to China. And my mom said, I'm 73 and a half. You'd have to be on a boat. It would take you 3 months to get there. It's a long, long way away. And she says, well, just keep wishing on your birthday every year. Blow out a candle. Maybe you'll one day get there. Well, it took me till I was 50, and I was there, and I've been back 9 times. And one of my friends from China stopped at my house and said, would you like to host another Chinese student? Because my husband and I had hosted Chinese students a number of times. It'll probably just be 1 year. Well, when I met her, I was very delighted to meet her, and was excited that she would be staying in my house, because at that time my husband was deceased, and it felt good to have someone else with me.
So, Elaine, can you tell us how you went from Shre Woo to Elaine. How did that happen?
So my first name is Xue, and that means snow in Chinese. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, later on I figure out people were calling me Zhu or Su or all other different, you know, forms of names, mm-hmm. pronunciation-wise. And then I don't want to be rude because it takes me longer to react to my own name. Mm-hmm. So then I was thinking, maybe I should get an American name. So then I went on Google, and then I Google English names, and then there is a list popped up and it has all the English names and then the description of the personality of each name. So then I pick one that most fit my personality, and that's Elaine. And that's how I get my, you know, grandma's name.
So you've never watched an episode of Seinfeld and you came up with Elaine?
No.
Oh,
that'll be her homework. We'll take her tonight and make her watch one.
So tell us about your journey. You came from where in China? Where'd you grow up?
Shenyang. Mm-hmm. Shenyang is the capital city of Liaoning Province.
Okay.
It's in northeast mainland.
Mm-hmm.
And I graduated from Liaoning University back in 2012 with a degree in Japanese.
Wow, you speak three languages then, Chinese, Japanese, and English?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep, and then I came to the United States in 2013 and met with Mary Beth and lived with her since October 2013, mm-hmm. and I had started a Gateway in Human Services, and then I just really love this field, and I move on to George Williams College and get my bachelor's in social work there.
Mm, that's in Lake Geneva, right?
Yes, Williams Bay.
Williams Bay,
yep,
sure.
Mm-hmm. Right off the lake, mm-hmm. small campus,
beautiful.
But gorgeous.
Yes.
Yep. and then I went to Madison right after the graduation, mm-hmm. got my master's in social work with a concentration in gerontology.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
So with that degree, what is your passion? What do you want to do?
I set up a goal for, it's a 3-year goal, mm-hmm. so that I want to be a licensed clinical social worker.
Okay.
So I'm just, you know, preparing for my mm-hmm. National examination now, and I want to find an employment in that direction.
So gerontology, explain to our listeners what that is and what you hope to do with it.
We studied about older adults. So then, you know, their lives and, you know, all different aspects of older life.
Well, okay. Older.
Yeah. Older.
Okay.
Yeah. People who are who are older.
So, Elaine, who are you calling old?
80?
That's safe. Okay. You're safe. All right. So you're going to be a social worker working with older folks. I understand. What kind of skills, how can you help older folks?
Well, I think first of all, good listening skills.
Mm-hmm.
Just being there with them and listen a lot of times will, you know, it helped a lot. Mm-hmm. You don't have to jump into a solution right away. Just simply being there and listen,
mm-hmm.
And being empathy. You know, just put yourself into their shoes and just thinking that, oh, what I will do in that situation. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, just connect them with the resources mm-hmm. they need.
Yeah. Coming from China to the U.S. and making an adjustment had to have been difficult. What were some of the challenges you faced? How are we different here in the U.S. than what you were grown up as in China?
Okay. I think being independent is really difficult.
Interesting.
You know, I would say my parents, they shelter me really well, mm-hmm. To a degree that they overprotect me. Like, they never exposed me to, you know, any form of reality.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, my only responsibility is to attain a good, an excellent school performance. And I had never, you know, worked one day in my life before the age of 21. And it's just, you know, that life skills, you know.
Interacting with people and
interacting, well, I mainly in school, not in society.
I see.
Not in workforce, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So. All right. Well, you've obviously done really, really great. So how are people in China kind to one another? How would they be practicing International Kindness Day? Can you think of some acts of kindness that you grew up with? I mean, your parents obviously loved you, you know, and sheltered you, and as you said.
Well, we help each other.
Mm-hmm. How?
So I can, well, it just, you know, in school, like we help each other, mm-hmm. and then we say thank you to the teacher. And we tell our parents, well, I tell my parents I love you. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it. Yeah.
So and you give each other a lot of positive affirmations.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And that's part of being kind.
Mm-hmm. And just, you know, simply being, I was just kind of thinking how to put that in words. Just be genuine to people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're going to get back to you. Mary Beth's going to now introduce Bob Bizet, the author of several books and community leader. And Mary Beth, can you introduce
Bob? I'm honored to say Bob Bizet is one of my friends and an inspiration. I've heard him as a speaker. I've seen his PowerPoints, his other things. He's very knowledgeable about character-based management, about knowing and loving, listening. He can describe a lot of things that help us be kind and open-minded, I think, which is a skill we all need in our daily lives. So welcome, Bob.
Thank you, Mary Beth. Glad to be here.
So, Bob, tell us a little bit about your books. What is the message you would like to get across to people? What is the passion that you have?
Well, the passion I have is something I got from a very large family. Mm-hmm. I have 6 sisters and 3 brothers.
Wow.
My mom is 1 of 9. My dad was 1 of 5. And we were born and raised in Chicago. We never had a get-together, birthday, Christmas, Thanksgiving, without 50 people in the house. And I always learned just by listening to people. And I don't know if you remember when you were younger, when the adults started to talk more softly, you would really listen because you thought that was the most interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, in our family, if it was really interesting, they started talking in Polish, and we had no idea what they were talking about.
Okay.
But learning was always important. And my grandmother, who came from Poland in 1895 by herself, she was 16 years old, and her mom had died. Her dad remarried. They started having some little kids. And her stepmom told her one morning she had to leave because there wasn't enough food for everybody. Mm-hmm. So she came to Chicago and started her life there, had cousins in Chicago, and eventually married, had children, one of them my dad, and lived with us when we were kids. And I was born in 1942. And so in the late 40s, I know when we would come home from school, we would all go to her kitchen because she had a big round kitchen table. And she had treats for us, little simple stuff, a little cinnamon toast or something. But she had coffee, too, which for 8-year-olds, I'm not sure how good it was, except she made it very weak and put a lot of milk in it. But the best thing about it that I remember was that after we had our treats, we all had to go around the table one by one and tell her something we learned that day. And so you learned. One, you paid a lot of attention in school during the day because you knew mm-hmm. you had to tell grandma something. And if you were in third grade, you kind of learned what the fourth and fifth graders were learning. And if you were in third grade and forgot what you learned in first and second grade, you could hear from them and it would mm-hmm. remind you. So learning has just always been a big part of what motivates me because I don't think you can solve many problems if you don't know what the heck you're doing.
Mm-hmm. I think that's wonderful. In your books, what is the message? You've authored two books?
Yes, sir.
Living and Loving, and what's the second one?
Knowing and Loving is one, and Character-Based Management are the other. And when I was younger, I never thought I'd write a book. But again, as I got older, and I'm always listening to people. I read books. I write to the authors and tell them what I thought and what I learned, and maybe share a couple ideas that I think about it. And I also go to lectures and listen to people. And what really made me kind of think about writing some of it down was about 11, 12 years ago, there was a visiting professor at Marquette. Her name was Eva Fleischner. She was from Fordham University in New York, and she was giving a talk one night about the Holocaust and evil. And how does something like that happen? And how do you prevent something like that happening again? So my wife and I went to it, and over the next few days, I jotted down some ideas and sent her about a 2.5-page letter and said, wow, I learned this, I learned that. Here's a few things I think about it. And I thought she would, like maybe most letters I write, they go in the garbage. But in this case, she wrote back 3 days later and said, are you a trained philosopher or theologian, which I'm not. I'm just a hardworking Polish boy out of Chicago. But I listen to people and try to understand and what they're talking about. And she said before she gave her presentation again, she was going to think about something, some of the things I wrote to her. And I thought, holy schmoly. And then she also said she would make a lot of presentations with Elie Wiesel, who was a teenager during the Holocaust, and all of his family went in to camps, and most of them died, but he was a teenager, and he survived. And he would go around up to 3 years ago making presentations around the world about it, and often he would make them with Dr. Fleischner. So she said next time she saw him, she was going to mention to him some of the things I wrote. My wife said, sit down and write this stuff down, because maybe somebody could learn, and I keep learning. So that's kind of why I wrote the first one. And my children and grandchildren and nephews are all spread out all over the place. So we don't have 50 people getting together at one time anymore. And this was just a way to share some ideas. And I've made close to that first book about 250 presentations to a broad range of audiences, business groups, service clubs, senior communities, libraries. And I think people are really hungry to think about some of these things, but everybody's life is busy, and they get caught up on having to do everyday things, which we all do. But I'm very pleased that I hope I help people think about some things again that they think are important.
Well, thank you both, and we at Peace Learning Circles, we've been emphasizing listening skills.
Yes.
Teachers have asked us to do that. And helping kids focus. So we do peace breaths to calm everybody down and to get everybody to focus. So I'm watching the Badgers play Iowa last Saturday. And the Badgers had an offsides penalty and another penalty. And the two announcers brought up the UW-Madison School of International Health, and they were talking about breathing to focus. And they said the entire Badgers team has gone through this 4-5-6 exercise where they're trained, taught and trained to take, and we call them peace breaths. Of course, they don't say peace breaths, but the trick is, you know, you put both feet on the ground if you're sitting, and you sit up straight and hold your hand on your stomach, and you breathe in for 4 seconds. You hold it for 5 seconds, and then you let it out slowly for 6. So you breathe in through your nose, everybody, for 4 seconds. Hold it for 5 if you can, and then breathe out for 6 seconds. So we do 2 or 3 of these. And then when we are sharing our peace tools with our students, and when they all have an opportunity to share, the other 25 students have to listen. So you listen with your eyes, you listen with your ears, you listen with your body language. And so often people, at least for me, what I experience is I get three words out of my mouth and somebody cuts me off because they have the answer and they know better than I do. So, I mean, I face that every day. You know, what people have become so opinionated about things and so divisive and don't listen. So we're teaching students how to listen. So we ask them, describe a good listener in your life. And I'm going to ask Mary Beth and Bob and Elaine, who's your best listener? So this is what we were getting. Okay, kids, who can you talk to? Who do you have in your life that listens to you? And a hand goes up, and it's my cat Snickers. Okay. And then the next hand goes up, and it's my dog, Wrigley. Okay, I'm using real words that the kids used. We were in a county school where they stable horses, and it's my horse, Trigger. And then we get my pet rabbit, Molly. So the teacher's in the room with us, and she's looking, and we're looking, and, you know, we've got this surprised look on our face like, uh-oh. Where are the adults in this picture? We went through several classes at different schools for several days, and that's what we were getting. My pet frog, Fred. I'm not making this up, folks. So do kids have someone in their lives who listens to them, who doesn't judge them, who doesn't scold them? Because so often it's scolding, it's judging, and I'm going to give you advice. No. You know, being principal at Bradford, I'd sit down with kids who were in trouble and say, okay, here are the ground rules. I'm going to shut up and listen. I'm not going to say a word. You tell me what's happening. And so I get a 15-year-old sophomore girl who says, Mr. Manji, I'm not perfect. But, you know, parts of me are excellent. And you in this school don't see my excellent parts. I'm thinking I'm listening to Socrates, you know, but it's a student, and this is how she felt. Okay, so Mary Beth, describe a good listener in your life.
I have a number of good listeners. I think Elaine is a good listener. There was an example today. I told her about something I was experiencing, and she gave me some very good information, and she said, sometimes don't look for solutions, just look at the different points of view. And sometimes we have to back off and not try to dive in and solve things. I think I kind of want to fix things too often.
Yeah.
And so she helped me step back, and I think that was real good. My niece Anna, second grade teacher at K-Tech, is always there for me. She's just very special in so many ways. And Joe Manji, you're a great listener.
Oh.
I love our curriculum meetings when we discuss how we're going to adapt and do the training sessions. You really exemplify 10 people yesterday. We were a real team. Deanna said as we were driving back, she just got so involved with us and the true meaning of team. Together, everyone achieves more. Mm-hmm. She said everyone contributed ideas to how we're going to enhance our curriculum and the new methods we're going to do. And I think that's true. Input from everyone is so important, not just one person, or the best leaders are good listeners like yourself. So thank you for leading us.
Well, it's really a true compliment. I think when you're working with a team, to make sure that everybody has a chance to say something.
Mm-hmm.
And so I learn a lot from reading Native American people, because they are tremendous listeners. And, for example, just as you were speaking now, I have to give you everything. I have to give you my body language. I have to look at you. I have to give you a smile. Mother Teresa said peace begins with a smile. But it's all inclusive. So there's a cliche, a saying that goes, everybody counts or nobody counts. So everybody in the circle has to be listened to. Virginia Driving Hawk Sneve, S-N-E-V-E, is a Cherokee chieftain. and her saying is the circle is a sacred symbol of life. What happens to one part of the circle happens to everyone else in the circle. So when we do our peace learning circles, hence the term circles, we end in a circle where all the kids are holding hands and we send the peace wave around with a gentle peace squeeze. Because if one person in that circle of 30 breaks it up, you can't send the message. So thank you very much. But that's the thing. I always look for who's silent, who's quiet, and make sure that they have a chance to speak. And you're right, Mary Beth, because we're in a world where I'm solution-driven too, and I need to just shut up and listen. Even though the solutions are racing through my brain, No, you don't. You got to listen. I had a mom come in at Bradford. Her son was in trouble, and I had it all figured out, and I gave her a cup of coffee, and she sits down, and I blurted out solutions for her son. I had it figured out. She got so mad at me. She said, I didn't come here for him. He's 17. He can figure out his own problems. I came in for me. Mr. Manji, you get an F for being as a principal. You didn't listen. And I said, oh, wow, I am so sorry. You're right. So I told the secretary, nobody buds in for the next hour. Just deal with it. Gave her another cup of coffee. Said, okay, I'm going to just shut up. I am so very sorry. So she goes on, uses the whole hour, okay? Finally at the end, okay, I feel better. But I'm only giving you a C minus because you should have known better to begin with. So, yes, we all race to solutions, but that's not what people want. They want us to be, you know, want to be listened to. So everybody out there, try, please, to be a better listener. Okay, Bob, who's a good listener in your life?
Well, most importantly, my wife. We've been married 53 years. Oh. And one of the things thinking about getting married, I wanted to marry a good friend. Mm-hmm. And a good friend is somebody who will listen and talk and share ideas. And so that's the most important. I had lots of good teachers in school who were listened, and you could ask questions, and they would teach you things, you know, but if they really listened to your questions, then, one, you appreciated mm-hmm. it, and two, you had better discussions. And being a manager, a city manager, and also a management consultant, I learned early on, and you kept talking about shut up and listen. Mm-hmm. I have an old app. You know, everybody's got apps. But Post-it notes, to me, are an old app, mm-hmm. and I carry this around with me all the time. For me, it just says shut up and listen. Because I learned working within an organization, working with citizens in a community, if you don't really listen to people, you don't get anywhere. You don't solve anything. People have to know that they're understood. And I've had people, 200 people in a room, upset about something the city was doing. And unless you really listened and gave them a chance to explain themselves and you could give them feedback that you did understand, then you can start working on stuff. Mm-hmm. But if you don't get to that point, it doesn't work. So and I've taught classes in communication and so on. But I need reminders all the time. And because I think we all do to do better things, and we can have good ideas sometimes, but unless we actually put it in practice, we don't make any progress. And the other thing that it does to me when you listen to people is you bring out the best in people. Mm-hmm. And once they know they're understood, then they'll work with you, and they'll share ideas. And I know managing people, which I've done, I always thought from when I started my career about being the second oldest of 10 kids and watching 8 little buggers below mm-hmm. me, my brothers and sisters, you had to manage those people. Mm-hmm. One, so they didn't run in the street and do something weird or whatever the case. But there was also a great joy in watching them learn. And I know this is Education Matters, and that's the first time I really thought about watching these little people learn. Mm-hmm. And the joy of learning. And I think we lose a lot of that as we get older. But I'm always trying to promote learning for myself, groups that I managed, to get them to learn from each other and me to learn from them. And I liked always people around me that thought differently, mm-hmm. because I know how I think, and it's not bad, but I know better. I'm one of 10 kids and a big, always interacting with people. My wife's an only child, and we had to find ways to make all that work a little. And we did, because we both wanted to learn and make good things happen. And mm-hmm. so I can go on forever, but that's part of that's so important. That's why truly I've carried these stickers. I got to replace them every once in a while because the stickiness comes off. But anyway.
Our Native Americans have a technique where when somebody's speaking, everybody listens, but then we give you an extra 3 seconds after you're done in case you have another thought. So that's the 3-second rule that I always use. I don't jump into the microphone right away. I'm giving everybody 3 extra seconds just in case you got one more thought that you might have forgotten. So, Elaine,
yeah.
Who's a good listener in your life?
I'm so blessed. I have, many of them. I would say my mom is the biggest.
Mm-hmm. Why is she good?
Well, she's always there, and I can share just about anything with mm-hmm. her. And, as I grow older and older, she's just become more, patient. Mm-hmm. And, she wants to know what I am thinking and what my hardship is. And, she's just being present. Mm-hmm. She's there. And I know she's not going to judge me or criticize me. Or, I know she's going to always love me so mm-hmm. I can share things with her. And, and she'll empower me, encourage me to find solutions,
mm-hmm.
By myself. Or she'll give me suggestions. But oftentimes after I talk to her, I already kind of come up with an idea of what mm-hmm. I want to do next.
Isn't it great to have somebody in your life who really cares enough to listen to
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
That's so huge.
Because a lot of times I just want to sort through my own mind
mm-hmm.
by talking it out loud. Yeah.
I'm also an adjunct university professor with National Lewis out of Chicago, mm-hmm. and we start off with, tell us about your support team. Everybody needs a support team. Kids need a support team. Kids at Bradford used to say, hey, Mr. Manji, we have all of us. There's 2,000 of us. Who do you have in your posse? Who do you have? And I'd like, whoa, okay, who do I have? I hope I have all the teachers. I hope I have the assistant principals. And I've got Mary Beth, So if you were the director, you were sitting at a table and you were at the head and you had seats around the table. So Mary Beth, who's in your posse? Who's on your support team?
Well, I'm so lucky. I have 2 fabulous sons, Kyle and Ravi, and they talk to me frequently on the radio and on the telephone, whether they're driving and I'm listening to the radio. I'll get a call, and I enjoy them calling me back and forth on the way back from work. And I think everyone on the Peace Learning team I consider my very best friends, and Deanna Racina, who's now my honorary granddaughter. She's here, and my granddaughter, Skye, in Kansas, I'm close to as well. I love them all. They're very special, and it's just great to feel that we have that circle of friendship. The people this morning, I was at the Racine Interfaith Coalition, and the things that we're working on, that they have a passion to help others, it mm-hmm. makes me feel good. And I'm so privileged. I'm the Park High advisor for the Key Club for Kiwanis. And these high school kids, they came up with, when Prasad was there, they wanted to use that logo, Be the Change. And when I'm with them, I feel I'm not as old as I am, because they relate to me and talk to me and help me be hip. And I said to them, my hip is help increase peace. And HIP,
well,
like
you're
that.
You're sweet 16 again. So yeah. There you go. You're still sweet. You're a little more than 16. Yeah. Not much, though. Yeah. Bob, who's on your support team? Who do you have?
Well, I have this big family, and not only brothers and sisters, wife, but nephews, nieces. We get together all the time, and we just have good times. We always have. One of the things our family started about 15 years ago was something we call Lucy's Children's Fund. It's a foundation to help children, and instead of giving each other goofy Christmas presents, which we didn't need anymore, we just started writing checks to Lucy's twice a year, and we meet twice a year, and it was my brothers and sisters and I who started it, but basically it's our kids who have taken it over because they really like it. And so we're going to have a meeting this Sunday. We're going to go down to Chicago, and some of us will be there, but the rest are going to Skype in from everywhere, nominate their charity. They got to do research on them and so on. And they just love it. And it's I've got a nephew in New Orleans, another one in D.C., people out on the West Coast and everywhere, and they'll all beam in. We go to one of my nephew's homes that's got a really big screen so we can watch everybody. But it's that's just another thing. I guess I've always been fortunate to work with lots of people. I think most people want to do the right thing, want to do good things. You got to kind of unleash that on them and give them the opportunities to do that. You get the best ideas. The book I wrote, Character-Based Management, just when I was writing it, talking about teams, when I was a city manager in a city in the Chicago area, we lost about 20% of our budget one year because they changed the sales tax laws, and a big company that produced about $5 million a year for our city moved to Delaware so they didn't have to pay any more tax. And so we had to get together and do it, and all the police chief, fire chief, all the department heads got together and started looking at what they could do, and we found a way to do it. And what I really like about it, and write a little bit in the book, is they started calling themselves the Dream Team. And that was based on the 1990 Olympic team, and I think 92 Olympic team, Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, all the everybody was great. And they won every game in the Olympics by at least 44 points. And they started calling themselves the Dream Team, and they still do. I didn't push that at all, but I know they really felt they could work together. And I always thought my job as a manager is to create a culture where people will work together, that they'll trust each other, they'll share their ideas, and you just come up with better answers. You get commitment from people. I don't see – that's why I wrote the other book. I think it's important to think of that.
Well, thank you. In the film Harriet, the story of Harriet Tubman, I encourage everybody to see it immediately, but Harriet Tubman – who was a general in the army, by the way. I didn't know that. She was a spy for the North during the Civil War, but she was also a general and commanded a regiment. To have a dream, you have to be a dreamer. That's one of her quotes. So, Elaine, who's in your posse? Who do you have? You have your mom and dad. You have Mary Beth. Who else you got?
So I would say they're my family and my American family.
Okay.
So, of course, American family going to have Grandma Mary Beth in it, Grandma Bar, well, Mom Jeannie, Daddy Don. And I kind of just put all my, you know, the professors, you know, counselors and my peers into my American family all under this category, too.
Well, that's great.
Well, it's so much fun. Like in the morning, it's just great. She Skypes with her mom every single morning. They talk like an hour or more. It's, you know, she, they're talking obviously in Chinese, so I don't know what they're saying. But it's just, you can tell by the tone of voice. There's that wonderful communication and that friendship as well. And like I said, Jeannie Tyree Francis, my neighbor who is a social worker, is like her American mom. Mary Bruja down the street, my 90-year-old friend Var, loves her. I forgot to say, my support team is Maria Calderon, too. And Maria said, she's got two brothers, but I have Elaine now. I always wanted a sister. I have Elaine as an older sister. So it's that camaraderie that you build to say that we don't want Elaine to feel alone. And like I said, I thought she was going to be here one year. Oh, nope, 2 years, 3 years. In fact, last year she didn't even go back home to China to visit her mom. She stayed the whole year and worked, and it's been fun. I taught her how to drive a car she didn't know how to drive, and all these things where you connect, but you share, and you learn to have that positive relationship and practice peace and how to be a good citizen.
So I have a challenge for all of us. This is WGTD Gateway Radio, by the way, 91.1 HD, so I had to put the commercial in because Troy's giving me the eye. What I see in our last 5 minutes is parents, if I take my grandsons to the zoo, I see moms and dads on their cell phone and they're not paying attention to their kids. And it's everywhere. In the store, kids are running around and everybody's got this attachment on their hand and they're looking at their cell phone and they're not paying attention to their children. That's awkward. What do you say to people, to your relatives, to your sons, your daughters, your nieces, your nephews? You know, what's more important? Do you know what I mean? So I'm sure everybody's dealing with that. What can you say that's polite and courteous and kind? Put your cell phone away and look at your kids? I mean, I don't know. That would be awkward. That would probably not be real kind. But to me, that's a serious problem. So everybody out there, it's not a lecture. How would you solve this? We would appreciate suggestions. We have 2 minutes to go. Any thoughts? Any brief thoughts?
I don't want, like, to confront people that way.
Right.
I try to set an example.
Okay.
And the people I deal with, family, employees, all that, set the example. And that's what I was always told to do as a kid, being the oldest, second oldest of 10. Mm-hmm. They always told me, set a good example for your brothers and sisters. And I think that's a good way. Because if you try to confront and force somebody, especially if you don't know them, and even if you do, you're not going to get more.
Elaine, you're part of the younger generation. What would you do?
Well, first of all, I wanna know, like, what are the parents doing on their phone? Are they doing jobs? Is it really important?
Oh, okay.
Or are they just being on social media and you know, checking on the post?
Sure.
And then I would want them to engage their kids. Maybe there is a game you can play together with their child.
Oh, okay.
No.
All right. Yeah.
Like,
are you on your cell phone all day long?
Not really, but if I have time, yes, I will.
Mary Beth, what would you do?
Well, I once went up to a child and said, leaned over and said, I have a secret I want to tell you. And they were kind of running around, and the parent was in a fast food restaurant, and the parent was kind of ignoring the child. I went to the child, and I said, can I tell you a secret? And the child stopped then, and I whispered to him, and I said, you know what? I'd really like you to come sit down. I have a coupon for a Frosty. Would you like one? And then the mother came over and, you know, noticed, what are you talking to my child for? So she stopped, and I said, well, I think it would be nice if we sat down and talked. I'd like to get to know you or your little boy more.
Okay. Well, I don't know if we could all do that, Mary Beth. But so this is Education Matters, and we want to thank Mary Beth Salke and Bob Bizet and Elaine Shrewu.
Yep.
And, of course, Troy McDonald, our leader. Thank you so much for listening in. And try your best to listen to your kids, to do an act of kindness a day, because it can change the world. So have a good week, practice peace, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
Support comes from Piasecki Funeral Home, Why not give the gift of peace of mind? Pre-plan your funeral arrangements with their caring, compassionate staff. They are dedicated to you, your family, and guests. 262-658-4101, KenoshaFuneralHome.com.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, the Racine Symphony Orchestra is accepting applications for the 2020 Young Artist Competition on Sunday, February 9th.